Released more soap and water, washing everything clear, incredibly clean. Toys! The key sticks out your back! Who wound you up? And the largest roar of all, flung at the woman, burnt her hands, seared her face, or so it seemed, for she seized herself as from a blast furnace, wrapped her fried hands in Egyptian rags, gripped her dry dugs, skipped back, gave pause, then started a slow retreat, nudged, pushed, pummeled inch by inch, foot by foot, clattering book racks, shelves, fumbling for handholds on volumes that thrashed free as she scrambled them down. Her brow knocked dim histories, vain theories, duned up time, promised but compromised years, chased, bruised, beaten by his laugh, which echoed, rang, swam to fill the marble vaults. She whirled at last, claws razoring the wild air, and fled to fall downstairs. Moments later, she managed to cram herself through the front door, which slammed. Her fall, the door slam, almost broke his frame with laughter.
"Oh, God, God, please stop, stop yourself," he begged of his hilarity.
And thus begged, his humor let be. In mid-roar, at last, all faded to honest laughter, pleasant chuckling, faint giggling, then softly and with great contentment receiving and giving breath, shaking his happy, weary head, the good ache of action in his throat and ribs, gone from his crumpled hand. He lay against the stacks, head leaned to some dear befriending book, the tears of releaseful mirth salting his cheeks, and suddenly knew her gone. Why, he wondered, what did I do? With one last bark of mirth, he rose up, slow. What's happened? Oh God, let's get it clear. First the drugstore, a half dozen aspirin to cure this hand for an hour. Then, think. In the last 5 minutes, you did win something, didn't you? What's victory taste like? Think. Try to remember. And smiling a new smile at the ridiculous dead animal left hand nested in his right crooked elbow, he hurried down the night corridors and out into town. Part 3. Departures. Chapter 45. The small parade moved, soundless, past the eternally revolving, ending but unending candy serpentine of Mr. Crosetti's barber pole, past all the darkening or darkened shops, the emptying streets, for people were home now from the church suppers, or out at the carnival for the last sideshow, or the last high ladder diver floating like milkweed down the night. Will's feet, far away below, clubbed the sidewalk. 1, 2, he thought. Someone tells me left, right. Dragonfly whispers. 1, 2. Is Jim in the parade? Will's eyes flicked the briefest to one side. Yes. But who's the other little one? The gone mad. Everything's so interesting, so touch it, everything's red-hot, pull-back, dwarf. Plus the skeleton. And then behind, who were all those hundreds, no, thousands of people marching along, breathing down his neck? The illustrated man. Will nodded and whined so high and silently that only dogs, dogs who were no help, dogs who could not speak, might hear. And sure enough, looking obliquely over, he saw not one, not two, but three dogs who, smelling the occasion, their own parade, now ran ahead, now fell behind, their tails like guidons for the platoon. Bark, thought Will, like in the movies. Bark, bring the police. But the dogs just smiled and trotted. Coincidence, please, thought Will, just a small one. Mr. Tetley. Yes, Will saw but did not see Mr. Tetley, rolling the wooden Indian back into his shop, closing for the night.
"Turn heads," murmured the illustrated man.
Jim turned his head. Will turned his head.
Mr. Tetley smiled.
"Smile," murmured Mr. Dark.
The two boys smiled.
"Hello," said Mr. Tetley.
"Say hello," someone whispered.
"Hello," said Jim.
"Hello,"
said Will.
The dogs barked.
"A free ride at the carnival," murmured Mr. Dark.
"Free ride," said Will.
"At the carnival," clacked Jim.
Then, like good machines, they shut up their smiles.
"Have fun," called Mr. Tetley.
The dogs barked joy. The parade marched on.
"Fun," said Mr. Dark. "Free rides.
When the crowds go home half an hour from now, we'll ride Jim around. You still want that, Jim?" Hearing but not hearing, locked away in himself, Will thought, "Jim, don't listen." Jim's eyes slid. Wet or oily, it was hard to tell.
"You'll travel with us, Jim, and if Mr. Cougar doesn't survive, it's a near thing for him. We haven't saved him yet. We'll try again now. But if he doesn't make it, Jim, how would you like to be partners? I'll grow you to a fine, strong age, eh? 22, 25. Dark and nightshade. Nightshade and dark. Sweet, lovely names for such as we, with such as the sideshows to run around the world. What say, Jim?"
Jim said nothing, sewn up in the witch's dream.
"Don't listen," wailed his best friend, who heard nothing but heard it all.
"And Will," said Mr. Dark,
"let's ride him back and back, eh? Make him a babe in arms, a babe for the dwarf to carry like a clown child, round about in parades every day for the next 50 years. Would you like that, Will, to be a babe forever, not able to talk and tell all the lovely things you know?"
"Yes, I think that's best for Will. A plaything, a little wet friend for the dwarf." Will must have screamed, but not out loud, for only the dogs barked in terror. Yiping, off they ran as if pelted with rocks.
A man came around the corner, a policeman.
"Who's this?" muttered Mr. Dark.
"Mr. Kolb," said Jim. "Mr. Kolb," said Will.
"Darning needle," whispered Mr. Dark. "Dragonfly." Pain stabbed Will's ears.
Moss stuffed his eyes. Gum glued his teeth. He felt a multitudinous tapping, shuttling, weaving about his face, all numb again.
"Say hello to Mr. Kolb."
"Hello," said Jim.
"Kolb," said the dreaming Will.
"Hello, boys."
"Gentlemen."
"Turn here," said Mr. Dark.
They turned. Away toward meadow country. Away from warm lights, good town, safe streets. The drumless march progressed.
Chapter 46.
Stretched out over a mile of territory, the straggling parade now moved as follows. At the edge of the carnival midway, stumping the grass with their dead feet, Jim and Will paced friends who constantly retold the wondrous uses of darning needle dragonflies. Behind, a good half mile, trying to catch up, walking mysteriously wounded, the gypsy who whirl-cymballed the dust. And yet farther back came the janitor father, now showing himself with remembrances of age, now pacing swiftly young with thoughts of the brief first encounter and victory, carrying his left hand padded to his chest, chewing medicines as he went. At the midway rim, Mr. Dark looked back as if an inner voice had named the stragglers in his widely separated maneuver.
but the voice failed. He was unsure. He nodded briskly, and Dwarf, Skeleton, Jim, Will thrust through the crowd. Jim felt the river of bright people wash by all around, but not touching. Will heard waterfall laughter here, there, and him walking through the downpour. An explosion of fireflies blossomed on the sky. The Ferris wheel, exultant as a titanic fireworks, dilated above them. Then they were at the mirror maze, and sidling, colliding, bumping, careening through the unfolded ice ponds, where stricken, spider-stung boys, much like themselves, appeared, vanished, a thousand times over. That's me, thought Jim. But I can't help me, thought Will, no matter how many of me there are. And crowd of boys, plus crowd of reflected Mr. Dark's illustrations, for he had taken off his coat and shirt now, crammed and crushed through to the waxworks at the end of the maze. Sit, said Mr. Dark. Stay. Among the wax figures of murdered, gunshot, guillotined, garroted men and women, the two boys sat like Egyptian cats, unblinked, untwitched, unswallowing. Some late visitors passed through laughing. They commented on all the wax figures. They did not notice the thin line of saliva crept from the corner of one wax boy's mouth. They did not see how bright was the second wax boy's stare, which suddenly brimmed and ran clear water down his cheek. Outside, the witch limped in through back alleys of rope and peg between the tents. Ladies and gentlemen, the last crowd of the night, 300 or 400 strong, turned as a body. The illustrated man, stripped to the waist, all nightmare viper, saber-tooth, libidinous ape, clotted vulture, all salmon-sulfur sky, rose up with annunciations. The last free event this evening. Come one, come all. The crowd surged toward the main platform outside the freak tent, where stood Dwarf, Skeleton, and Mr. Dark. The most amazingly dangerous, oft-times fatal, world-famous bullet trick, the crowd gasped with pleasure. The rifles, if you please. The thin one cracked wide, a racked display of bright artillery. The witch, hurrying up, froze when Mr. Dark cried, And here, our death-defier, the bullet-catcher who will stake her life, Mademoiselle Tahoe. The witch shook her head, bleated, but Dark's hand swept down to swing her like a child to the platform, still protesting, which gave Dark pause, but in front of everyone now he went on. A volunteer, please, to fire the rifle. The crowd rumbled softly, daring itself to speak up. Mr. Dark's mouth barely moved. Under his breath, he asked, Is the clock stopped?
Not, she whined. Stopped?
No. He almost burst out. He burnt her with his eyes, then turned to the audience and let his mouth finish the spiel, his fingers wrapping over the rifles. Volunteers, please.
Stop the act, the witch cried softly, wringing her hands.
It goes on, damn you, worse than double damn you, he whispered, whistled fiercely. Secretly, Dark gathered a pinch of flesh on his wrist, the illustration of a black nun blind woman which he bit with his fingernails. The witch spasmed, seized her breast, groaned, ground her teeth.
Mercy,
she hissed, half aloud. Silence from the crowd. Mr. Dark nodded swiftly. Since there are no volunteers, he scraped his illustrated wrist. The witch shuddered. We will cancel our last act and...
Here, a volunteer.
The crowd turned. Mr. Dark recoiled, then asked, Where?
Here.
Far out at the edge of the crowd, A hand lifted. A path opened. Mr. Dark could see very clearly the man standing there, alone. Charles Holloway. Citizen, father, introspective husband, night wanderer, and janitor of the town library. Chapter 47. The crowd's appreciative clamor faded. Charles Holloway did not move. He let the path grow leading down to the platform. He could not see the expression on the faces of the freaks standing up there. His eyes swept the crowd and found the mirror maze, the empty oblivion which beckoned with 10 times 1,000 million light-years of reflections, counter-reflections, reversed and double-reversed, plunging deep to nothing, face falling to nothing, stomach dropping away to yet more sickening plummets of nothing. And yet, wasn't there an echo of two boys in the powdered silver at the back of each glass? Did or did he not perceive, with the tremulous tip of eyelash, if not the eye, their passage through, their weight beyond, warm wax amongst cold, waiting to be key-wound by terrors, run free in panics? No, thought Charles Holloway, don't think. Get on with this. Coming, he shouted. Go get 'em, Pop, a man said. Yes, said Charles Holloway. I will. And he walked down through the crowd. The witch spun slowly, magnetized at the night-wandering volunteer's approach. Her eyelids jerked at their sewn black wax threads behind dark glasses. Mr. Dark, the illustration-drenched, super-infested civilization of souls, leaned from the platform, gladly wetting his lips. Thoughts spun fiery Catherine wheels in his eyes. Quick, quick, what, what? And the aging janitor, fixing a smile to his face like a white celluloid set of teeth from a crackerjack box, strode on. And the crowd opened as the sea before Moses and closed behind, and him wondering what to do. Why was he here? But on the move, steadily, nevertheless. Charles Holloway's foot touched the first step of the platform. The witch trembled secretly. Mr. Dark felt this secret, glanced sharply. Swiftly, he put his hand out to grab for the good right hand of this 54-year-old man. But the 54-year-old man shook his head, would not give his hand to be held, touched, or helped up. Thanks, no. On the platform, Charles Holloway waved to the crowd. The people set off a few firecrackers of applause. But Mr. Dark was amazed. Your left hand, sir. You can't hold and fire a rifle if you have only the use of one hand. Charles Holloway paled. I'll do it, he said, with one hand. Hurrah! Cried a boy below. Go it, Charlie, a man called out beyond. Mr. Dark flushed as the crowd laughed and applauded even louder now. He lifted his hands to ward off the wave of refreshing sound, like rain that washed in from the people. All right, all right. Let's see if he can do it. Brutally, the illustrated man snapped the rifle from its locks, hurled it through the air. The crowd gasped. Charles Holloway ducked. He put up his right hand. The rifle slapped his palm. He grabbed. It did not fall. He had it good. The audience hooted, said things against Mr. Dark's bad manners which made him turn away for a moment, damning himself silently. Will's father lifted the rifle, beaming. The crowd roared. And while the wave of applause came in, crashed and went back down the shore, he looked again to the maze, where the sensed but unseen shadow shapes of Will and Jim were filed among titanic razor blades of revelation and illusion, then back to the Medusa gaze of Mr. Dark, swiftly reckoned with, and on to the stitched and jittering, sightless nun of midnight, sidling back still more, Now she was as far as she could sidle, at the far end of the platform, almost pressed to the world red-black rifle bullseye target. "Boy!" shouted Charles Holloway. Mr. Dark stiffened. "I need a boy volunteer to help me hold the rifle," shouted Charles Holloway. "Someone! Anyone!" he shouted. A few boys in the crowd shifted around on their toes. "Boy!" shouted Charles Holloway. "Hold on. My son's out there. He'll volunteer, won't you, Will?" The witch flung one hand up to feel the shape of this audacity which came off the 54-year-old man like a fever. Mr. Dark was spun round as if hit by a fast-traveling gunshot. "Will!" cried his father. In the wax museum, Will sat motionless. "Will!" called his father. "Come on, boy!" The crowd looked left, looked right, looked back. No answer. Will sat in the wax museum. Mr. Dark observed all of this with some respect, some degree of admiration, some concern. He seemed to be waiting, just as was Will's father. "Will, come help your old man," Mr. Holloway cried jovially. Will sat in the wax museum. Mr. Dark smiled. "Will, Willie, come here." No answer. Mr. Dark smiled more. "Willie, don't you hear your old man?" Mr. Dark stopped smiling. For this last was the voice of a gentleman in the crowd speaking up. The crowd laughed. "Will," called a woman. "Willie," called another. "Yoo-hoo," a gentleman in a beard. "Come on, William," a boy. The crowd laughed more, jostled elbows. Charles Holloway called. They called. Charles Holloway cried to the hills. They cried to the hills. "Will, Willie, William." A shadow shuttled and wove in the mirrors. The witch broke out chandeliers of sweat. "There!" The crowd stopped calling, as did Charles Holloway, choked on the name of his son now, and silent. For Will stood in the entrance of the maze, like the wax figure that he almost was. "Will," called his father softly. The sound of this chimed the sweat off the witch. Will moved, unseeing, through the crowd. And handing the rifle down like a cane for the boy to grasp, his father drew him up onto the stand. "Here's my good left hand," announced the father. Will neither saw nor heard the crowd sound forth a solid and offensive applause. Mr. Dark had not moved, though Charles Holloway could see him during all this, lighting and setting off cannon crackers in his head, but each, one by one, fizzled and died. Mr. Dark could not guess what they were up to. For that matter, Charles Holloway did not know or guess. It was as if he had written this play for himself over the years, in the library, nights, torn up the play after memorizing it, and now forgotten what he had set forth to remember. He was relying on secret discoveries of self, moment by moment, playing by ear, no, heart and soul, and now? The brightness of his teeth seemed to strike the witch blinder. Impossible! She flung one hand to her glasses, her sewn eyelids. "Closer, everyone!" called Will's father. The crowd gathered in. The platform was an island, the sea was people. "Watch the bullseye targeteer." The witch melted in her rags. The illustrated man looked left, found no pleasure in the skeleton, who simply looked thinner, found no pleasure looking right to a dwarf who blandly dwelt in squashed idiot madness. "The bullet, please," Will's father said amiably. The thousand illustrations on his jerking horseflesh frame did not hear, so why should Mr. Dark? If you please, said Charles Holloway. The bullet? So I may knock that flea off the old gypsy's wart. Will stood motionless. Mr. Dark hesitated. Out in the choppy sea, smiles flashed. Here, there, 100, 200, 300 witnesses, as if a vast titillation of water had been provoked by a lunar gravity. The tide ebbed. The illustrated man, in slow motion, proffered the bullet. His arm, a long molasses undulation, lazed to offer the bullet to the boy, to see if he would notice. He did not notice. His father took the missile. Mark it with your initials, said Mr. Dark by rote. No, with more. Charles Holloway raised his son's hand and made him hold the bullet, so he could take a penknife with his one good hand and carve a strange symbol on the lead. What's happening? Will thought. I know what's happening. I don't know what's happening. What? Mr. Dark saw a crescent moon on the bullet, saw nothing wrong with such a moon, rammed it in the rifle, slapped the rifle back at Will's father, who once more caught it deftly. Ready, Will? The boy's peach face drowsed in the slightest nod. Charles Holloway flicked a last glance at the maze, thought, Jim, you there still? Get ready. Mr. Dark turned to go pat, conjure, calm his dust-crone friend, but cracked to a halt at the crack of the rifle being reopened. The bullet ejected by Will's father to assure the audience it was there. It seemed real enough, yet he had read long ago that this was a substitute bullet shaped of a very hard, steel-colored crayon wax. Shot through the rifle, it would dissolve out the barrel as smoke and vapor. At this very moment, having somehow switched bullets, the illustrated man was slipping the real marked bullet into the witch's jerking fingers. She would hide it in her cheek. At the shot, she would pretend to jolt under the imagined impact, then reveal the bullet caught by her yellow rat teeth. Fanfare, applause. The illustrated man, glancing up, saw Charles Holloway with the opened rifle, the wax bullet. But instead of revealing what he knew, Mr. Holloway simply said, Let's cut our mark more clearly, eh, boy? And with his penknife, the boy holding the bullet in his senseless hand, he marked this fresh, new, wax, unmarked bullet with the same mysterious crescent moon, then snapped it back into the rifle. Ready? Mr. Dark looked to the witch, who hesitated, then nodded once, faintly. Ready, announced Charles Holloway. And all about lay the tents, the breathing crowd, the anxious freaks, a witch iced with hysteria, Jim hidden to be found, an ancient mummy still seated glowing with blue fire in his electric chair, and a merry-go-round waiting for the show to cease, the crowd to go, and the carnival to have its way with boys and janitor trapped, if possible, and alone. Will, said Charles Holloway conversationally, as he lifted the now suddenly heavy rifle. Your shoulder here is my brace. Take the middle of the rifle gently with one hand. Take it, Will. The boy raised a hand. That's it, son. When I say hold, hold your breath. Hear me? The boy's head tremored with the slightest affirmation. He slept. He dreamed. The dream was nightmare. The nightmare was this. And the next part of this was his father shouting, Ladies, gentlemen. The illustrated man clenched his fist. Will's picture, lost in it like a flower, was crushed. Will twisted. The rifle fell. Charles Holloway pretended not to notice. Me and Will here will now together, him being the good left arm I can't use, do the one and only most dangerous, sometimes fatal, bullet trick. Applause. Laughter. Quickly, the 54-year-old janitor, denying each year, laid the rifle back on the boy's jerking shoulder. Hear that, Will? Listen. That's for us. The boy listened. The boy grew calm. Mr. Dark tightened his fist. Will was taken with slight palsy.
We'll hit 'em bullseye on, won't we, boy? Said his father.
More laughter. And the boy grew very calm indeed, with the rifle on his shoulder. And Mr. Dark squeezed tight on the peach fuzz face nestled in the flesh of his hand. But the boy was serene in the laughter, which still flowed, and his father kept the hoop rolling thus.
Show the lady your teeth, Will.
Will showed the woman against the target his teeth. The blood fell away from the witch's face. Now Charles Holloway showed her his teeth, too, such as they were. And Winter lived in the witch.
Boy, said someone in the audience, she's great. Act scared. Look.
I'm looking, thought Will's father, his left hand useless at his side, his right hand up to the rifle trigger, his face to the sight as his son held the rifle unswervingly pointed at the bullseye and the witch's face superimposed there. And the last moment come, and a wax bullet in the chamber. And what could a wax bullet do? A bullet that dissolved in transit, what use? Why were they here? What could they do? Silly, silly. No, thought Will's father. Stop. He stopped the doubts. He felt his mouth shape words with no sound. But the witch heard what he said. Above the dying laughter, before the warm sound was completely gone, he made these words silently with his lips. The crescent moon I have marked on the bullet is not a crescent moon. It is my own smile. I have put my smile on the bullet in the rifle. He said it once. He waited for her to understand. He said it silently again. And in the moment before the illustrated man himself translated the mouthings, quickly, Charles Holloway cried faintly, Hold. Will held his breath. Far back among wax statues, Jim hid away, dripped saliva from his chin. Strapped in electric chair, a dead-alive mummy hummed power in its teeth. Mr. Dark's illustrations writhed with sick sweat as he clenched his fist a final time, but too late. Serene, Will held breath, held weapon. Serene, his father said, Now, and fired the rifle. Chapter 48. One shot. The witch sucked breath. Jim and the Wax Museum sucked breath, as did Will, asleep, as did his father, as did Mr. Dark, as did all the freaks, as did the crowd. The witch screamed. Jim, among the wax dummies, blew all the air from his lungs. Will shrieked himself awake on the platform. The illustrated man let the air from his mouth in a great angry bray, whipping up his hands to stop all events. But the witch fell. She fell off the platform. She fell in the dust. The smoking rifle in his one good hand, Charles Holloway let his breath go slow, feeling every bit of it move from him. He still stared along the rifle sights at the target where the woman had been. At the platform rim, Mr. Dark looked down at the screaming crowd and what they were screaming about. She's fainted. No, she slipped. She's shot. At last, Charles Holloway came to stand by the illustrated man, looking down. There were many things in his face. Surprise, dismay, and some small strange relief and satisfaction. The woman was lifted and put on the platform, Her mouth was frozen open, almost with a look of recognition. He knew she was dead. In a moment, the crowd would know. He watched the illustrated man's hand move down to touch, trace, feel for life. Then Mr. Dark lifted both her hands like a doll, in some marionette strategy, to give her motion. But the body refused. So he gave one of the witch's arms to the dwarf, the other to the skeleton, and they shook and moved them in a ghastly semblance of reawakening as the crowd backed.
Dead? But there's no wound.
Shock, you think? Shock, thought Charles Holloway. My God, did that kill her? Or the other bullet? When I fired the shot, did she suck the other bullet down her throat? Did she choke on my smile? Oh, Christ.
It's all right. Show's over. Just fainted, said Mr. Dark. All an act, all part of the show, he said, not looking at the woman, not looking at the crowd, but looking at Will, who stood blinking around, out of one nightmare and fresh into the next, as his father stood with him, and Mr. Dark cried, Everyone home! Show's over! Lights! Lights!
The carnival lights flickered. The crowd, herded before the failing illumination, turned like a great carousel, and as the lamps dimmed, hustled toward the few remaining pools of light as if to warm themselves there before braving the wind. One by one, the lights indeed were going off.
Lights, said Mr. Dark.
Jump, said Will's father. Will jumped. Will ran with his father, who still carried the weapon that had fired the smile that had killed the gypsy, and put her to dust.
Is Jim in there?
They were at the maze. Behind them, on the platform, Mr. Dark bellowed, Lights, go home, all over, done.
Is Jim in there?
Wondered Will.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Inside the wax museum, Jim still had not moved, had not blinked.
Jim?
The voice came through the maze. Jim moved. Jim blinked. A rear exit door stood wide. Jim blundered toward it.
I'm coming for you, Jim.
No, Dad.
Will caught at his father, who stood at the first turn of the mirrors with the pain come back to his hand, racing up along the nerves to strike a fireball near his heart.
Dad, don't go in.
Will grabbed his good arm. Behind them, the platform was empty. Mr. Dark was running. Where? Somewhere, as the night shut in, the lights went off, went off, went off. The night sucked around, gathering, whistling, simpering, and the crowd, like a shake of leaves from one huge tree, blew off the midway. And Will's father stood facing the glass tides, the waves, the gauntlet of horror he knew waited for him to swim through, stride through, to fight the desiccation, the annihilation of oneself that waited there. He had seen enough to know. Eyes shut, you'd be lost. Eyes open, you would know such utter despair, such gravities of anguish would wait you, you might never drag past the 12th turn. But Charles Holloway took Will's hands away.
Jim's there. Jim, wait! I'm coming in.
And Charles Holloway took the next step into the maze. Ahead flowed sluices of silver light, deep slabs of shadow, polished, wiped, rinsed with images of themselves and others, whose souls, passing, scoured the glass with their agony, curried the cold ice with their narcissism, or sweated the angles and flats with their fear.
Jim?
He ran. Will ran. They stopped. For the lights in here were going blind, one by one, going dim, changing color, now blue.